Welcome to Ever Beyond. On Wolf Spirit Radio, No Borders Radio, and everbeyond.info. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond. And yes, the 11th of January 2015. Who'd have thought? Here we are, once again, on Ever Beyond, the alternative Sunday service on Wolf Spirit Radio, Ever Beyond Radio. Well, it would be on No Borders if I could get on the stream. On Scottish Sovereigns if I could get on the stream. I just keep trying. See if I can get on. Nope. Oh, well. And anybody else who's syndicating this, I never know. Tonight, my guest is somebody who I've met on the No Borders stream, and we just kind of have a passing glance, and then I see his podcast sometimes, and I look at one the other week, and I thought, wow, this guy's right on my street. So I'm really pleased to have you on. I'm very glad to welcome on the mad scientist himself, Mr. Shaziz. Are you Mr. Shaziz? Is it Shaziz? Sir,
yeah,
Shaziz?
That's it. Lord. Can you hear me? Uh-oh, I think I lost you again.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah, you're back.
Back on.
Doggone technical difficulties. That must be some of them gremlins.
That's one of them gremlins. This is, as I said, in the just before the show. This is a $500 mic, and I don't see why, unless there's a loose. Let me just check the connection. It doesn't seem to be cutting out much.
Yeah, you sound good.
Yep. So, for that, we'll just continue as we are, because it seems to be working right now as it is. Lord Shaziz, Sir Shaziz, Shaziz, Bob Shaziz, just, Shaziz
just,
Smith.
Just simple Shaziz.
So, you emerged into this world some time ago, presumably. And you had a kind of natural leaning towards stuff. Were you one of these kids that pulled things apart? I mean, I certainly was. You know, my sister always used to complain, oh, yeah, you're breaking things, yeah. Did you kind of pull things apart and eventually learn how to pull them together again? Or did you contemplate things? What was your process?
My mom used to get mad at me all the time because I was continuously taking my brother's toys apart to see how they ticked.
So, yeah, so you were you're always inquisitive. And so what happened when you hit school?
Well, I kind of was the outsider in the nerd realm, so to speak, because they never really told me enough. I always wanted to know more about what made tick. Things tick. I didn't just want to know the science. I wanted to know why, why it does what it does. And with that, I start me on my life journey, always trying to be the little mad science inventor guy, building stuff and sometimes inventing stuff that was already invented. You know how it goes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is the thing, is you might come up with something, but somebody's already thought of it.
Yeah, I had that experience the other day, about a couple days back anyway. I thought I had a really good idea to take one of them bug zapper fly swatters and turn it into a driver for a Tesla coil, and by God, got on YouTube, and it's probably about 20 videos out there already of it.
Yeah, I mean, because there aren't many things around the house that, like, produce high tension on a continual basis, you know. You get the spark, but very rarely do you get enough to go with your Tesla coil.
Yeah.
Yeah, presumably other people have thought, what can I use? What have I got around there? You found yourself outside of things at school. So did you find, like, you were asking questions beyond the capacity of the teachers to answer?
Yeah, it looked like I was getting to be an annoyance with them, because I was always asking them, you know, why this reaction happens when you do this or whatever, you know, and it's like they didn't have no answers for it. They had what the book said, but they couldn't go any further to expand on it, you know. I wasn't satisfied with knowing that, you know, if you plug a nickel and a penny into a lemon that you get a battery, you know. I wanted to know why that was happening, you know.
So, further on down the line, you started to find out why. Where did you start? I mean, did you go to university? I presume... I'm feeling that you didn't go to university because you haven't been de-educated.
No, what I did was I just started picking up every book that I could find. You know, a lot of, you'd be surprised what you can find at flea markets and libraries that they're throwing out. You know, I like the older books because it has the real science in it, the real electricity. You know, before my day, back in my day at least, they used to do real experiments in school. You know, nowadays it ain't like that. They got too many potential lawsuits. If somebody blows something up, you know, you can't do that. But, you know, going back even further, my first real experience with blowing something up was I had a large pair of tweezers and shoved them into the light socket to see what would go on.
And did a different hairstyle result?
Well, no, actually, it scared the crud out of me and everything, but the tweezers, they kind of split apart and then put a big old black mark up the wall, which Mom wasn't very happy about. And so, you know, I never did that again. I think I was like 10 years old when I did that.
So your first venture into high tension electricity. So let's talk about stuff. You know, let's get down to it, because you know, in my school career, when I was 14, I started messing about with a relay, like a car relay. It's a switching relay. In a car, it lets you switch on the heavy current of the headlights from the very thin wire that goes to the dashboard. And so I was messing about with one of those, and I thought, I know, I wonder if I could wire it up as a buzzer. And I thought, yeah, if I'll take the output of this, and when it connects, it, you know, da 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 da. So I wired it all up, and I plugged a little tiny little PP3 battery into it. And it started buzzing, and I was really happy. And that was it. That was my joy. That was all I wanted.
I built an alarm system out of a bunch of toys that had blinking stuff going on, and I had it all rigged up to my door. That way, whenever somebody opened my door, that all these flashing lights and buzzers would go off. And Mom come in my bedroom, and she thought the room was on fire because, I mean, there was lights going off everywhere, you know. Scared the crud out of her, but that was pretty much my first little gizmo.
All right. Well, anyway, just to finish the story, so what I then did is I touched two of the poles, and I got a jolt out of it. I thought, hang on a second, I just got a pretty strong electric shock from this tiny little PP3 battery circuit. And I thought, where's the energy coming from? I thought to myself. And so I attached a piece of wire, and I was playing around with it. I brought it into school the next day, and I had these, put a pair of pretty long wires on it, and I got a whole bunch of my schoolmates, about eight of them, and I said, everybody touch each other's hand, you know, form a chain, and then I gave one to one end and the other, and everybody felt this pulsing, this electricity going through their bodies. And I was really impressed by this. This is like a tiny little battery. Where's all this energy coming from? So I said to the teacher, and these words are burnt on my head, burnt in my brain, onto my soul. I said, where's this energy? And he said, oh, that's back EMF. It's an annoyance. We try to get rid of it. And at that point, my scientific curiosity just shriveled to a little husk there remaining until 2012, when I discover that people are calling these Bedini motors and, you know, radiant energy and, oh, but I did that. And so it kind of rekindled my interest in new electrics. And I've been listening to Cliff High for a long time. And a few years ago, he was saying that the new electrics will be coming along soon, and it'll be people putting their stuff up on YouTube and then other people downloading it, doing the experiments, and then uploading their version, their slightly improved version. And so it creates a cross-pollination of open-sourced new electrics. That's what he was calling. And so I've been watching for it, you know, because I was, you know, quite hooked onto Cliff High and what he was talking about. And I think he's spot on. I think that this is exactly what's happening. And I think you, sir, are one of the people that's kind of in the middle of it.
Well, and I like looking backwards in time, so to speak, when it comes to like the old technology, because a lot of times if you go back and look at what they were doing back in the day, it gives you a lot more ideas for what you can do now. You know, Tesla sparked off an amazing amount of technology that people don't even realize. You got Tesla technology in your cell phone. We're using it right now as we're talking on the computer, you know. The things that he came up and the fact that he was responsible for AC current and so on and so forth, I mean, it's what put us to where we are today. A lot of the old technologies, even the stuff that Edison was doing and wireless energy transmission, wireless telegraph, and all the things from the past, the mercury arc rectifier, that is my favorite one because that was essentially the very first plasma reactor ever designed, and its capabilities were way beyond its time. And that's why I say we should be so much further advanced as a society, technology-wise, than what we are. I mean, granted, it's cool to have what we got right now, but I just think that with all the technology that we have access to, we could solve so many problems around the world that it's just mind-boggling. There shouldn't be any problems, literally, you know. There shouldn't be no food shortages. Shouldn't be no sort of energy crisis or anything like that, because we have the technologies, the solutions to resolve it all. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, absolutely. And if, you know, because the problem of, okay, the main people problem, shelter, warmth, food, water. With infinite amounts of energy, or with a, you know, with an abundant form of energy, you can create housing, heat these houses. You can create hydroponic systems, so that you can grow food in these houses, and all of these, and desalination or rain collecting. No, that's passive anyway, but. All of these issues that we have can all be solved by injecting more energy. And if you live a higher energy lifestyle, then everything is more or less provided for you, isn't it?
Well, the thing about energy is we're using it so inefficient, and we have the capabilities to literally tap into nature without even disrupting nature. You know, I gave this example, such as, you know, you got one window on one side of your house open and you got one window on the opposite side of your house, and when the wind blows through that first window and goes all the way through your house and out the other side, you could use that wind. I mean, like the curtain flapping, you know, there's work being done there. It blows the papers off your desk, there's work being done there, and all the way out through the other side of your house. You haven't took away or gained anything from the wind that just came through. You just use it to do physical work. Well, I mean, not by your choice, because you had the window open and blew everything around, if you understand what I'm saying. But the same thing applies with electricity. You can do the same exact thing to tap into electricity. We're trying to right now, we're trying to force a massive amount of power down a really small pipe. And so we build up pressure, which in turn builds up heat, which in turn destroys the coils in whatever motors that we've got. And it doesn't have to be like that. There's ways that you can actually tap into that current and still get the work done, but not have any waste in afterwards.
So, loss is the problem. We lose electricity. We lose energy through losses.
Wasted we waste an amazing amount. For probably 80% of all the fuel that we use, we're probably only getting 20% of the energy that's potential there. I mean, for example, a car, an automobile, has a injection system that squirts the fuel in a small stream. Well, when you do that, a lot of that fuel is being wasted out of the exhaust. It doesn't all burn up in the combustion chamber, so it gets out the exhaust. And so we have things called catalytic converters on our cars that will clean up that excess on the way out. It's essentially a reburner. It reburns waste fuel. Some of it can be piped back up into the intake and reburn again. However, a lot of it goes out the tailpipe. Now, if you took from the start to finish and you've turned that into a really fine mist, you atomized that fuel before it ever even went through that injector. So now all you're doing is putting in just the amount of fuel that it takes to create the combustion, to push down the piston and turn that camshaft. Then you're going to use just a small fraction of that fuel as opposed to what you're using now. And the same thing applies with anything else you do, electricity or whatever. If you can measure with an amp meter on the outside of the wire of your appliance to find out how many amps draw, then you're measuring waste energy. All you have to have is those magnetic fields to be able to interact with each other, and they will repel each other. You know, positives will repel and negatives will attract. So that's how that works. And so why have the field 3 foot outside your electric motor when it's not necessary to be that far? So you're putting in a whole lot more energy than is really necessary to get the same electron flow through that motor. You know, I think over there in your guys' neighborhood, you use your electricity at 50 hertz. Am I wrong?
Yeah, this is a point of mine that I'm quite interested in, the frequency of things. I mean, I'm all over frequency, you see.
Oh, yeah. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, and I know that you're a 432 man. So, to me, I think mains should be at 54 hertz. What do you think?
Well, I think we'll probably get them down even further than that. And see, if everything has its own frequency, it doesn't matter what it is. Everything is made up of, if you follow the electron theory, then everything's made up of a proton, a neutron, an electron. Copper has an extra electron on there. It's like 29 electrons, and it's loosely coupled to the atom. So when we shake a strong magnetic field across that, we shake that electron loose, which causes the current flow and so on down the line. But imagine if you could target specific just the electron alone with its own specific frequency, enough to disrupt it, to either wobble it or get the electron flow without having to use a brute force magnetic field to shake that thing loose. You'd still get the same amount of current flow without having to put near as much work to it from start to finish. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, so by finding its resonance, what you're talking about is finding the resonant frequency of that copper electron that just it makes it relax. It's, oh, let's go for a walk.
Well, it can be done, because if you look at how the fluorescent bulbs work, you see all these Tesla videos and Slayer Exciter videos where we're sitting there, we're sending a wireless signal across to a bulb that's not connected, but it hits the gas and energizes that gas, excites that gas inside there, which in turn produces visible light. So you know that you're affecting that frequency of that gas. You're making it something occur there. And so if you could send a signal, just a specific signal, whether it be a tone or whatever, down to that copper atom, the electron on that copper atom, and disrupt it enough that where it either exchanges places, it may be a case that those electrons aren't, you know, traveling. It may just be when they wobble towards the next one, it's like two magnetic fields. If they're totally separated, you know, far enough apart, they won't couple together. But if you move them close together, those two fields will become one field, and so on down the line. So if each electron is coupling with each other and creating a stronger field down the line, then that would be what we would call the electron flow and the electricity as we know it. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. So it's not about one electron shooting down the whole length of the wire, is it? It's about one electron just moving a little bit and then pushing all the others.
That's what I believe.
Yeah.
And so if you think about this for a second, when you run something and we're talking about electrons moving around, whatever, you still have exactly the same amount of electrons as you did when you started. So you're not lost anything from that copper wire. It's still there. You just moved them around a little bit.
So go ahead.
So, you know, with that said, we're not doing nothing spectacular except for exciting those electrons so much that they in turn create friction, which in turn creates heat and eventually will destroy the insulation on the wire. That's how come things go bad. Anything above 60 hertz will burn my motor out of my electric fan or whatever at my place, because now you took what would be multiple turns of copper wire and turned it into essentially a dead short, one winding. You see what I mean?
Right.
So if you could do this by just stimulating an electron just enough to get that interaction, that coupling effect between electrons, and you could get the same amount of work done, because all you have to do is create the field strong enough that it will reach out and touch the field on the opposite side. Positives repel and negatives attract. So you would essentially have an electric motor that wouldn't even get warm. And if everything I'm thinking as far as this theory goes right, you wouldn't even be able to tell how many amps it was drawing from the normal way that we measure it, because the field wouldn't be strong enough in order to for the amp meter to pick it up, because you're just doing just enough to get that work done. The only place you'd be able to measure it would be on the input and the output side of your generator.
So what are the implications for that?
Well, the implications means you'd have an electric motor that would last forever. As long as it didn't corrode, it'd never go bad. The amount of fuel that it would take to generate power, it would be mind-boggling small. It'd be insignificant, you know. Instead of using 100 tons of coal, you could probably get it done with a few pounds of coal to do the same amount of work. And because all you're essentially doing, if what I'm thinking is right, all you're essentially doing is sending a signal down and causing an effect with the electron to wobble it, maybe lean it towards the other electron to cause that coupling effect, or even if it's sending it off and going down, you know, you'd still get the same amount of flow. I mean, if you look at those fluorescent bulbs, they're not plugged in, but they're pretty bright when you're in the right field. You see what I mean?
Yeah, the LEDs, if you look on head-on, they're quite bright, aren't they? Not at the side.
Oh, yeah, and them LED, the LED technology, that's another thing, man. This LED technology is simply amazing you could do so much with much more than what's being done with LEDs. It's just mind-boggling. You can actually charge your cell phone up using a single LED. Obviously, it's not going to charge nearly as fast, but when the sunlight hits that LED, it acts just like a solar panel. So what's to stop somebody from making a solar panel out of LEDs? I mean, expense-wise, it might be cheaper just to go out and buy you know, a solar panel, but even that, solar panels are getting impressive. You're getting to where you can actually put a solar panel underneath regular light and get that thing to put out some pretty substantial energy. It's amazing stuff.
That is very interesting because, I mean, for instance, I reach down here. I reach back up again. You know, when you get in your 30s, you go, you bend down, you go, and in your 40s, you bend down, you go, you straighten up, you go, in your 50s, you go, and in your, as you get, it goes, on the way up and all the way down. Anyway, meanwhile, so I've got one. It was a little light that there's, how many of these? There must be about 20, three rows of 20 LEDs. So you're saying that I can stick this in the sun and I'll get a voltage out of it?
Yeah, not only that, if it's anywhere near radiant energy, like a Tesla coil or a Slayer exciter, I got a video that I did here recently. I can't remember what the doggone name of it was. It might have been the one I said debunk this. Anyway, those things will pick up radiant energy as well, and you can actually charge capacitors with them. And so, you know, I'm not talking about trying to defy any laws of physics or anything like that. I'm talking about redefining the way that we actually use electricity, such as today on the Knights of the Roundtable, you were talking about a lot of stuff that we normally talk about. But I was talking about how we actually use electricity, and we have the problem of the back EMF. And for those people out there listening that ain't familiar with what the back EMF is, it's like when you're in your car and you got your car running and everything's fine, and then once you turn on your air conditioner or your light, any light bulb or whatever, you hear that alternator bogged down some, you know. And what's going on there is the electron flow, when it's just a generator freewheeling or whatever, then it's not under a load. But once you put it underneath a load, that those electrons can make a return path back into the same coil that's actually generating the power to charge your battery up. And what happens is it creates a second field inside there that begins to act like a brake, which starts to slow down the armature. And so I was thinking, how could you defy that? How could you stop that without defying the laws of physics or, you know, whatever, how could you stop that? Well, then I got to watching some of Tesla's technology and the way that the Tesla coil works, and knowing that spark gap, when you build up a charge in a capacitor bank, and it has enough pressure to jump across, to literally leap across that open gap to the other side and pulse that coil, there's a lot of pressure behind there. So there's no way that an electron could make a return path down to back to the source. That's the same way the mercury arc rectifier worked back in the old days. What they had was they had a little pool of mercury down inside of a glass tube that had two anodes and two cathodes. And when they shot the high voltage AC inside the deal, it first started to dead short because of the mercury, and it got the mercury so hot that the mercury would vaporize and turn into the fourth state of matter, being plasma. Well, the pressure build up inside that mercury arc rectifier the energy has to go somewhere. And so what ended up happening is it goes out the other side there, and you had rectified DC current. Because when they changed over, when Tesla won out for the AC current over Edison's DC current, they already had in place infrastructures with like elevator motors, high voltage DC elevator motors that they needed to be able to run. So they needed to be able to rectify the AC current into DC current so that they could still use those elevator motors. And that's how they were able to do that, by using the mercury arc rectifier. They essentially made a diode, It's that simple. The pressure that was built up behind there was so much that the electrons couldn't flow back the other direction. And so the same thing would apply with a spark gap. If you was to take high voltage, no current, watts, all that kind of stuff, just strictly high voltage, like a static charge, and you arc it across to a capacitor, you can charge that capacitor up. Now, before you even got to that capacitor, you couldn't run nothing. There's not enough current flow in order to run anything. But to this point, we don't need to run anything. All we're doing is we're filling up a bucket full of water. And once that water is, once that bucket is completely full, we're going to dump that bucket, which is now a sudden rush of power. It's like an 800 microfarad capacitor will blow your finger right off your hand. That's how much power is stored inside that thing.
Yeah, those are the kind of capacitors that boy racers have in their car boots so that they can run these enormous subwoofers.
Oh, I got some the newer ones that are 500K microfarad. These things are bad to the bone. So I got three of those. That's
almost a farad, isn't it?
Yeah. And so that's a lot of power. I'd be afraid of those things if they were fully charged up, you know, because I've discharged a 800 microfarad capacitor in my lab, and it made such a loud noise that my wife thought I blew myself up, and she come running to see what was going on. But I was still alive. But anyway, what I'm saying is that the way that we use electricity right now, we're essentially, we got big old power generators that are sending the power down the line, and basically it has to have a return path, which they have a secret that they don't tell everybody that they got from Tesla, which uses the earth as a huge tank circuit, so they don't get near the back EMF that you would on a like a DC generator. So anyway, with that said, if you tried to run it off of it's really super simple to make high voltage DC. Just high voltage. You know, you've walked across the carpet and built up a charge and zapped your brother's ear, I'm sure, at some point in your life. Now, if you don't have a brother,
I was the brother.
Yeah.
Mine were the ears.
That's a lot of power. And there's an actual equation out there that'll tell you how far, you know, when that bolt, how many inches or millimeters long that bolt is how many volts is actually occurring while that's happening. But either way, you really couldn't do no really physical work with it to this point. But you could charge a capacitor with it and use the capacitor as a storage. And then after you filled that storage up, then you can use it as a battery if your capacitor bank's large enough. So this would totally erase the whole back EMF thing, because there's no way that the electrons could actually make a return path back to the initial source. You see where I'm coming from?
Right, so I mean, essentially, you're talking about, back EMF is sunk in engines and motors by a capacitor, so you're actually just sucking the EMF into the capacitor itself.
Yeah, you're sending a lightning bolt across, charging up that capacitor, and your capacitor is now going to be your source for your power. It's not the generator, it's just the source where you're going to build up pressure inside that, and then it's like a air compressor. You know, your air compressor motor, by itself won't air up your average tire. It has to build up pressure inside that storage tank before it will ever do anything. And so once you build the pressure up, then you can air up your tire. And then whenever it gets low, then your compressor motor will kick on again. So essentially, what I'm talking about, if you have a high voltage generator that can send the power across a gap into a storage tank, and use that storage tank as your power source, as opposed to direct off to the deal, then you beat all that back EMF.
Okay, so You're essentially, and how long does it take for this, for these capacitors to discharge, doing normal things? And this is this is a DC situation, isn't it? Direct current, like a battery. Essentially, you're basically, a capacitor is like an enormous, a high capacity battery that can be charged instantly, which lends me to thinking, how come we don't use capacitors, the same technology in capacitors as we do in batteries? surely you'd get a resistance-less battery.
Oh, I'm sure of it. There's a capacitor out there called the boost cap. If you look it up, look up boost cap on YouTube, you'll run across a video where this guy took six of these boost caps and put them together into a battery pack. And so the average battery is close to 20 pounds. And this is only about 2 pounds. So there's less weight your car is going to have to carry around. But he was starting up a four-cylinder motor with this boost cap, deal. And so, you know, the good thing about these newer capacitor is their charge and discharge rate is impressive. I mean, it don't take as long to charge them, and it don't take as long to discharge them. Depending on how much load you're actually going to put on that capacitor will determine on how fast it discharges. So you got to think about it like this. Your tank, you have a bigger tank for your storage for your energy if you want it to last longer. It's like your battery bank for your solar panel. You know, one battery maybe give you 6 hours, two batteries that give you 12 hours, and so on down the line. But the nanotechnology as far as what do they call that?
Graphene.
Graphene technology and stuff like that. They're getting better and better on the day. I'm surprised we don't have like a combination battery / capacitor. I know somebody told me here recently that there is a battery called a cap battery or something like that that literally does have a built-in capacitor bank. So the technology's there. Why ain't we using it? That's the question.
Isn't it? Let's talk about, because we were talking earlier about these inventions that happened like 100 years ago and 150 years ago, and yet we're still burning carbon fuel.
And it's aggravating.
It's aggravating.
Let me tell you what somebody was talking about on. I don't know if you got the chance to hear the Knights of the Round Table today, but we waste so much. And there's so much people complain about how the environment is and about plastic being wasted and all this kind of stuff there. We have the technology, we have the knowledge to literally take a pig farm or a chicken farm and turn it into a fuel source. Because if you think about the methane coming off of pig poo, it's ludicrous, you know. If you ever drove past a pig farm, it's
abundant. Let's say it's abundant.
Yeah. So there's a lot of energy right there. So even the pigs are making energy. The chickens are making energy. There's energy in everything under the sun. And I keep saying about free energy, and people kind of get the whole free energy / over unity / 0 point all mixed up. What I'm saying free energy is like, when's the last time you ever got a bill from the sun or the wind or the earth? You know, there's hydroelectrics, there's thermoelectrics, there's solar power. All these things would be green technologies. And when you talk about, like nuclear waste, that's probably one of the most stupid things that was ever even happened. You're taking a radioactive material and boiling water. And that's all you're doing. You're boiling water. You could do it with logs and not have near the danger. But instead of boiling water, which would give you the potential of maybe a steam explosion that would now scatter radioactive material everywhere, why don't you use that radioactive decay in the normal, the way that uranium is naturally found in nature, you know? When it's degrading, when it's decaying, it's actually releasing energy. And we know that we can pick up wireless energy. So you could actually build a coil system using uranium and pick up that energy as it's coming out. There's a material called americium that's in the smoke detectors. People don't realize they got radioactive material in their house. And how that works is that little chunk of americium in there it's decaying, and as it's decaying, it's putting off a little bit of energy that a little element on the other side is detecting that energy release. And until that energy release is disrupted, like such as smoke going in between there and disrupts that energy that's being picked up on the opposite side, then your smoke detector don't go off. But the moment that smoke gets in between there and disrupts it, it tells the smoke detector, you know, you got a problem. So, you know, you're picking that energy up with a smoke detector on a small scale, and people's not having their hair fall out from the smoke detectors in their house. So why couldn't you use that same process on a larger scale, and instead of making the uranium to the point to where now you're going to dip it down in water, which is going to, while it's decaying, is going to act just like a microwave oven and keep heating that water continuously, and to the point to where if you don't cool it down, such as how whenever the water gets hot, it turns into steam, and then it goes through condenser systems, which cools the water back down, and now you've got that cooling pond where they have all the radioactive rods at. You should have never put it in the water to begin with, because the moment you put it in the water, that radioactive decay started acting like a microwave oven. Water is a dipole molecule, which means it has a positive and a negative side on there. And so while it's decaying, that energy released from the radioactive material is causing the water molecules to literally rock back and forth at such a rapid rate that they're creating friction, which in turn is creating heat, and in microwave oven case is cooking your food. So instead of catching that radioactive decay in a dangerous manner, such as plugging it down into water, why don't you take that radioactive decay and put it in something like an inert gas that will turn that like argon gas into the plasma state, essentially building the futuristic mercury arc rectifier without the mercury. You're using something that is not bad, and as long as you're using that energy and you don't allow it to build up pressure, you got no problems.
So it's like if you burn gunpowder just on the floor, it will just go pfft. But if you stick it inside a restrictive pipe, it will go bang.
And that's exactly what's going on. That's why they have problems. They put a radioactive material into water in order to boil that water, to turn it into steam, to then send a steam down pipes to turn turbines. And in the process, now they got to cool that water back down. Otherwise, they'll build up pressure in the system, and then pow, you got a Fukushima thing going on. And now that you've already radiated all that water, now the water is radioactive too. It's got to disperse that energy. And so in order to disperse that energy, you need to drain that power off as quickly as humanly possible. It is possible to resolve that whole Fukushima deal. I mean, that there's energy being released in that water. Otherwise, it wouldn't be doing what it's doing. And so if you want to take and do a heat transfer type of deal, there's all kinds of thermoelectrics that you could use, everywhere from thermal piles to Peltier elements, thermal couples, and much, much more that you could use to disperse that energy. And that energy won't go any farther. It'll keep on going forever and a day until it finally stops completely. You see what I'm talking about?
Yeah, so
there's enough radioactive waste on this planet to run this planet almost indefinitely.
And that's without actually having nuclear power stations that is basically spread in much more harmless phases. So have you got any thoughts about what can be done about the issuance of radioactive stuff that's come out of Fukushima? Do you have any solutions?
If instead of them allowing it to go off into the ocean, which is blatantly obviously killing a lot of wildlife off there, and once that food chain drops down in the ocean, when the ocean goes, we go with it. You know, I was telling everybody, we're on a sinking ship here, and we got to do something. So if they was to take and instead of divert, allowing this to leak off into the doggone ocean, figuring out a way, and fast way, to start getting that, number one, the water cooled down. That's the biggest key, because as long as it's radioactive, those molecules are in there, they're going nuts. you need to figure out a way to drain that energy off. And I mean, like, something simple as tell everybody and his brother, turn every light you got in the house on and do not shut it off for the next 100 years. You know what I'm saying? And drain that energy away from that water, and eventually that water will cool down. It's the same way with all the other deals right there. I mean, if they got all this radioactive material in a pool of water and it's turning it into steam, you realize how many houses you could heat with that? My God, man. You know, copper is an amazing conductor of not only electricity, but it's an amazing conductor of heat. You could run fresh water through that pipe, and have those pipes down in the pool, and you're not getting that radioactive transfer like you are when that radioactive material is directly in the water and in contact with the water. If you're just using the pipe, nothing more than to pick up the heat off of that water and divert that water off. So if they took and made like a giant heater core, like you'd see inside your car, you know, like your radiator, and they put that heater core into that pool and then diverted the heater core with some pipes off down into the ocean. They could recirculate cold water from the ocean in order to start cooling that stuff down with pumps. They could, and it's not going to pick up any radioactive waste on the way through. It's just going to be ocean water circulating through there. Only thing you want to do is take away that heat, because the heat is the problem. And the heat came from those radioactive rods that were in contact with the water, and now the water itself is picking up radioactive decay and sending it on out the line. You see what I mean?
Sure. So, it's a good approach. You know, what have we got? We got a lot of hot things. What do we need to do? Well, we need to cool it down. So how do we wick the energy away? And, of course, use it usefully would be really good, you know. So charge a zillion batteries and get lorries full of batteries and charge them all up and cart them off I get your ideas is to use that energy in some way. Trick the energy.
And as far as cooling down, we've got liquid nitrogen. We could cool down those rods. I don't know why they hadn't done that.
That might be fun. Liquid nitrogen on a hot rod. Yeah.
Something.
<They're> wrong. So.
You got to get that heat away from there.
That's true.
Shouldn't put it in there to begin with. That was their first mistake.
Yeah.
Easier ways to boil water.
Indeed. So let's have a look back at the domestic level and of being able to the kind of solutions people can come up with in their own homes to kind of move away from having to pay for electricity to do the things that we use. I mean, because, you know, in the last half hour we've been talking about there is abundant energy, you know.
Well, the first thing that's going on in their house is they're wasting a ton of energy. Like, for example, everything that has a transformer in there is using electricity whether you're using it or not, because as long as it's plugged into the wall, that primary coil is activated. And the only time you use that energy off of that would be whenever you turn your deal on, which then it would obviously use a little bit more energy. But even when it's not being used, that primary coil is still charged up. There's still a field coming off of it. You can figure that out. Just go get you one of them wireless AC testers and go around your house, turn everything off, and then go around your house and put that wireless AC tester near a transformer. And if that thing comes on, then you know it's still using energy. So, with that said, if you ain't using it, unplug it from the wall. You know, there's like little cell phone chargers. Those got a primary coil in there. And so they're continuously using energy. Your television set, whenever you're not using it, it's on standby waiting for you to push the button on a remote to turn the rest of the circuit on. But it's still sitting there using energy. Even the energy saver light bulbs, you know. same thing. They got a primary in them. The only difference is that on those, you have a light switch that breaks the circuit. So if you have a surge protector on whatever it is that you're running, and you turn that surge protector off and shut it off whenever you're not using it, then therefore you ain't got that current flow going on. See what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
There's a saving right there. And then if you can take and use like some of the cheaper solar technology available today, they use them for sheds. It has a little solar panel you put outside, and it charges up some rechargeable batteries, and you can put them inside a shed and have a power source in there. But if you take every light bulb you take off the power grid, then that's extra money in your pocket.
Yeah, that's a good start. Experimenting with these little they're an array of Cree LEDs. These are the super bright flat panel mounted LEDs that you get in the very bright torches. And how many are there? There must be about 20 of them on this little thing, 1 inch in diameter. And they directly they're amazing. They directly replace the little halogen capsule bulbs that go in the 12 volt lamps. You know, the ones that you get, they've got little telescopic arms, and it's little desk lamps with a little transformer at the bottom.
Yeah, the LED technology these days is flat out amazing.
Do you know what blows me away?
Yeah,
they're polarity insensitive.
Oh yeah.
Well, they'll run on AC, DC, and reverse DC. They don't care.
And like I said, they're good for picking up radiant energy, but not only that, there's so many different light spectrums. There's light you can't even see. There's infrared and so on down the line. That's why they have these little infrared detectors that, you know, you got one on your remote that sends out a little red light and sends like an infrared signal towards another receiver that'll pick that up. Well, light is heat and heat is light, vice versa. So your body itself is literally putting off light from the heat. And so the technology that they've got for LEDs could literally be used to turn your body heat into a battery, flat out.
So you could have a suit that was covered in these very, you know, nicely mounted so they didn't prick into your skin, but essentially infrared diodes that picked up your body, the frequency that's coming off your body. Because, our bodies unconsciously vary the flooding and draining of blood in our skin so that our skin emits pulses of infrared energy.
Yeah, your skin's like a huge radiator, and your body has the capabilities of regulating it. And so with that LED technology that I was talking about, you could literally build a suit that when you went outside and it was cold outside, the suit would warm up, and vice versa. I mean, it's amazing. That's why I say we should be so much further advanced than what we are today. It to me, it's aggravating.
Yeah, I mean, we can go into the whys, but all we need to do is say secret space program. That's where everything is. It's put forward as fiction. You know, oh, look, there's Star Trek. Oh, look, there's Stargate. Oh, yeah. Oh, isn't it amazing? All these, and we live this dull gray world, and they live in this blue world. They live in the blue world, don't they? All these science fiction. But and we live in this gray world, and never the twain has met until now, when we suddenly realize, hang on a second, I'm becoming more telepathic, and there's this other group of humans that are around.
Well, you know, nothing in this world surprises me. If an alien popped right up in front of me right now with a time traveler and Sasquatch himself, you know, it wouldn't surprise me in the least, because there's so much more to this world than meets the eye.
I had a time traveling Sasquatch on my show once.
I hope you got some good secrets from him. No, I'm like I was saying though, but we should be so much farther along than what we are, and it's as simple. It goes as simple as to like whenever they put the iPad out. You know, first they put an iPad out. It was cool. It cost you what, $600, and then they said, "Oh look, hey, we got our next iPad, an iPad 2 or whatever. You know, it has a camera in it. Why couldn't they put the camera in the get go? The technology was already there. They already had it. They want to sell what they got first before they give you anything else. And whoever's got the best toys is the boss. That's the way this world works. You know, I got a stealth bomber, you got an old biplane. Who's going to win that battle? You see what I'm saying?
Indeed.
So, you know, but either way, it's cheating humanity into that massive leap that we should have made forward, because we have the technology to resolve everything, single thing on this planet, from diseases to starvation to wars. I mean, for Pete's sake, if we're having wars over oil, any resource whatsoever, the earth is 3/4 covered in water. And people say, well, you can't drink ocean water. Well, go over there and tell those individuals over there in Dubai who not only built their own land out of sand out of the ocean, but they turned around and built huge desalination plants, and they got water pumping up to them. They probably cornered the market in sea salt while they did it. And so these guys were able to do it. Why can't we do it? The earth is 3/4 covered in water. And for all the waste out there, if you don't like the pig farm, and you're hollering about where we got an energy crisis, then take the pig farm and refine that poo into methane and burn it in an efficient manner and heat somebody's house with it. They've been using chicken poo forever and a day to make fuel out of. You know, and there's so many biofuels out there, it's crazy. And they're talking about taking, growing a whole bunch of corn and turning it into a biofuel, and then running cars with it. Well, you take the corn, you feed the pig poos, and you take the poo and you make methane out of it, and then you run your car with it. And you don't have to smell the poo at the same time. It's common sense. It's crazy. We waste so much stuff, and so much stuff is floating around in the ocean that could be used. There's actually some folks over there in Europe that took plastic and made gasoline out of it. Did you know that?
Yes, I'm aware of this, and I think it's a fascinating thing, because it's made out of petroleum in the first place.
Yeah.
Then we, you know, and the other, here's another sort of backyard invention in my, sort of back brain invention, is, I've never seen one, all right? But all your plastic bags and your plastic packaging and all these things, you just take it and you stick it in this bin thing, and then you bring down a kind of hydraulic lever that heats it up and steams it and sterilizes it and turns it into some kind of useful brick thing that can be made
Lego.
Lego, yeah, that you can make, or big style Lego that you can then make into useful things like garden sheds or, you know.
Well, one of the biggest problems with wooden houses is that they rot. And so if you took this waste plastic and ground it up, and then you could actually use an injection molding system to where you shot like expanding foam inside there as well, and have an R factor astronomical that you could build walls for houses in a house that would last for hundreds, if not thousands of years, as long as it wasn't decayed by, UV rays from the sun.
Yeah, you'd plaster it over, and use lime. I mean, I have a friend who's definitely very into lime. Let's say he's very into lime. I'll have him on the show one day. Rendering, he's got a jet. He uses a jet of compressed air, and mixes the powders in the compressed air jet, and adds water at the very last time, so it all hits the wall and crystallizes immediately with very small amount of water.
See, there you go, man. We got every single answer to every single question on how to resolve this entire so-called energy crisis that, in my mind, never even existed to begin with. We have more than enough land to feed every single soul on this planet. We have more than enough materials to literally house and clothes every single individual on this planet. There's only going, there's, you know, not getting into the whole conspiracy of the whole deal, but either one of two things is happening here. Either our representatives are just so flat out stupid they don't get it, or they are doing it intentionally. There couldn't be no other explanation. You know what I'm saying? Because you and I have sat here for the last hour here, and we've talked about many, many solutions right out of the gate that if you and I are smart enough to figure this out, you know the guys at the big companies know it as well, and they've known it all along. The Mercury Arc rectifier that I talked about, that was back in the late 1800s. I got a Edison bulb that still to this very day works, and that's because of before... When Edison made that bulb, there wasn't a phrase called planned obsolescence to where they have to make something that'll break down after a while so that they can sell more of them. You know, they didn't have the technology to make a tungsten element thin enough so that after so many hours it would burn up. So that old bulb, to this very day, I can plug it into the socket and it will still light up. You see what I mean?
Absolutely. And we're at the top of the hour, Shazzy, so let's take a little break. I'm going to play a real oldie, because it just seems to be appropriate. It's called Time in a Bottle.
It's a good song.
And preceded by the sound of My Guides, the first time I ever heard My Guides, and they told me this thing.
Energy. Transforming energy.
And welcome back. Nice gentle tune there. Drift off away into the time zone. I don't know if you're back. Are you back, Shaziz? No, he's gone to get his coffee, so we'll be filling in. So, yes. Happy New Year, everybody. It's a whole new year, a whole new schedule. We're going to be improving the schedule, connecting with other stations. We are listener supported, and please come to the to wolfspiritradio.com as a website. And if you like the shows, they're worth a dollar, as Jagger always says. So yeah, come along. And we do now offer the first week of an archive is free. So you come along and you look at the website, wolfspiritradio.com, and see the new graphics. And if you look under the archive, there's you see the videos. This, you know, if you're not logged in as a subscriber, you'll get the video archives for free, and there's amazing stuff in there. Stuff, and you know, some very difficult. You know, we tried to get hold of things that would be banned, and some of them were. You know, we've got some rare documentaries like Alternative 3 and the Franklin scandal and things like that. So you can visit. You know, there's some good stuff here. The Wolf Spirit Archive is amazing. You know, Dave and I have been avid archivers of everything that we've ever kind of listened to and recorded and crammed it onto one enormous hard drive. And his legacy is several years of rent for that particular archive. So he's preserved it, and I've made a backup copy somewhere on this planet of the archive as it was last July, and then we've got the rest of it building up. So do come along to Wolf Spirit Radio Archives, and I'm building a new search facility. It doesn't quite work yet. I've got to fiddle about with some PHP. I can only do that when I've got some time, and obviously time. I've run out of bottles of time. You know, I've got a load of empty time bottles outside my house, like I've been partying like it's been 1999 once again. Welcome back to Ever Beyond. Shaziz, are you with me? Nope, not yet. So, as well, I also have my own personal website, which is everbeyondradio.com, and that's building up quite nicely at the moment. I've got all sorts of things. You can book consultations with me. Yeah, you can talk to me. I will talk to you personally and tell you all about your stuff and help you on to the next step, which is what I really like to do. This is the thing that I like to do and the thing that I can do, and it's quite satisfying to help somebody get on. And sometimes, you know, I get feedback from listeners, you know, sometimes years later. You know, I'll get, oh, I heard you 2 years ago and you set me off on this thing and you did that, and oh wow, really? And I inspired you to do that? Really? Yeah. Oh. And you know, very rarely does this happen, but it's such a joy when it does, to know that somebody's there's actually somebody listening and found what I said to be useful. For that,
I'm back. Sorry about that. Are you there? Uh-oh. Hope we're not live, because I can't hear you. Do-do-do-do-do.
Oh, that...
still can't hear you. I heard you there for a second.
Hang on. There we go.
Yeah, now I got you.
Now you got me. All right. I hope that wasn't a big gap, because I was doing some very interesting conversation about what's going to happen to the network as we grow. You talk about the knights. Who are the knights?
Well, the knights are everybody.
The knights.
The knights are. It's a simple. To become a knight, all you got to do is make a Skype call into the Knights of the Round Table. Everyone has ideas. Everyone has solutions. The whole concept for the Knights of the Round Table came way back whenever TNS Radio was doing Seeking Solutions, you know. And so I got to thinking. I said, you know, there's so many brilliant people in this world that if we could just get them together at the table to work towards making the world a better place, imagine what we could accomplish. You know what I'm saying? You still there? The sound dropped off again.
Yeah. There. It's I've got an intermittent fault. Hang on. I'm just going to pull it, unplug it in again.
Are we live yet?
Yeah, there we go. We are live, indeed.
Okay, well, what I was saying was that the Knights is everyone out there. The Knights of the Round Table. If you want to come to the table and we can agree to disagree in a respectful manner, and we could talk about all kinds of solutions and ideas and enact those solutions to get things in this world motivated to fix things. I mean, just what you and I have talked today, that's essentially what the Knights of the Round Table is like. You know, we come together, we talk about technologies, we talk about problems in the world, but we don't sit there and grind it in there. The world's all bad, the world's all bad. It's not about that. It's about what can we, each of us, do to make the world better? And so, you know, I got friends in every single country out there, you know, that we would all rather get together and have a barbecue instead of having a war with each other. That was the whole concept of bringing all these people together. We got things in common. We live clear across the ocean from each other, and we got things in common. And we got problems in the world that we can actually solve. You see what I mean?
Yes, you can. And, barbecues for peace, I'm all up for that. I'll have a chicken rib.
Yeah, I would like to have some chicken wings. I like chicken wings, hot sauce on them.
I'll tell my rooster.
Anyway, you know, like I said, there isn't a single problem, even in the medical field, that can't be resolved. You know, in the cancer field, there's so many different alternative medicines out there that have potential enough that they warrant looking into even farther, that could actually solve that issue. You know, I looked at a deal that who sent it to me yesterday about mushrooms. There's a mushroom out there that has all kinds of benefits. There's
chaga.
You know, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I got loads of it.
And so. With that said, if the mainstream medicine and scientists could get at the table, so to speak, and sit down and talk about and hash out the pros and cons, you know, it's like if you watch a commercial on TV about a specific medicine, whatever. First, they'll tell you what this medicine can do for you, and then they'll say that there's a potential that it could also do this, 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 and this, and not excluding death. And so I'm thinking, my God, I'd rather just take my chances with the disease and then take that stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Where's the common sense in it?
You know, I've seen your American adverts for drugs, and it's like it's astounding. You know, from my perspective, from my British perspective, the level of hard sell on those ads is ridiculous. I mean, to me, it was like, please get this man out of my head, or this voiceover out of my and then this fast voice at the end tells you all these terrible things that, you know, as you say, what it can do for you, and then what it will do to you.
Small example would be hemp seed oil, you know. Match up the possible dangers of hemp seed oil as opposed to the possible dangers of, say, like Ritalin or Prozac or Luvox or all these different chemicals that they like to put in your kid. You know, I'm not saying you want to give your kid hemp seed oil. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying if you was to do a commercial about both and you weighed out the pros and cons, I almost guarantee you that you're at least 98% of your average Joe would head towards the hemp seed oil as opposed to the one that could make your lung fall out of your mouth or something, you know? You might get cancer. You might have dizzy spells or a heart attack, you know? Why would I even want to try that? I mean, it's like playing Russian roulette.
Worse, because somebody in authority has told you that it's good for you and this will make you better. And that's the big problem, isn't it?
When they do, like chemotherapy, there's a girl over here that's being forced, literally forced. She's 17 years old. She doesn't want chemotherapy, but she's literally being forced by the court to undergo chemotherapy. I know for fact, because I've watched it occur in my life, because I've had family members who went through chemotherapy because of cancer, and they lost their battle with cancer anyway. But the process of chemotherapy, it not only destroys your immune system, but it makes you sick, it makes your hair fall out, and it just makes you a miserable mess through the whole entire process, and only for an 80% chance of, possibly 80% chance of remission in your cancer, when I would rather try my odds at using something like the mushroom, the chaga that you was talking about, you know, let nature take its course or whatever. You know, it's the sheer stupidity of all of this stuff. And these guys that call themselves doctors ought to be flat out ashamed of themselves, because if, from what I understand, they all take this oath not to do any harm. Well, if you know for a fact that this is going to weaken your immune system, make your hair fall out, and make you seriously ill, then you ought to take a second. Your body tells you when something's wrong. And if somebody is sitting there vomiting and their hair is falling out, that ought to be a pretty good red flag to say that you might not want to go down this road and try something different. But the big pharmacies, they don't care about all that, just like the power companies don't care about alternative energy. And it's blatantly obvious whenever they start saying stuff like Florida, you can't be off the power grid. It's illegal to be off the power grid. You have to be connected to the power grid. Or they want to charge you a tax to use solar panels. Or, you know, there's a tax on wind farms or whatever, you know. Here we are in 2015. And you got companies and corporations out there that are paying these huge carbon tax, supposedly. They want to charge you a carbon tax. They want to, you know, you got to reduce your carbon footprint. Well, there's so many technologies out there that would bypass carbon fossil fuels that it is just mind-boggling. You can burn water, for Pete's sake. If you burn water, guess what byproduct you get?
Water.
Water. Yeah. So, come on, man. You put water in the one end and you burn it. You went down the road and you got water out the other end. Now, if we know this technology, the mainstream knows it as well.
Well, you know, the Navy has just come out a couple of years ago, said, yeah, we have ships that run on salt water. What's it to you?
It has its own... on catalyst in it, or the electrolyte, the salt, you know, to make the water conductive. So they don't even have to add anything to it. And what are they pumping out the other end? Salt water. So if the Navy can do it, then why ain't the average Joe able to do it? And that's why I call my show Mad Science, because it really makes me mad. The science that I was taught in school, I was 9 years old when I first found out about global warming, and I figured it out right out of the gate because I paid attention in school. And how it went down was I heard them talk about how the planet was heating up due to fossil fuels. All right, well... So I said, man, that's bad. You know, it only takes a small degree of temperature difference to cause the Gulf Stream to, you know, change, and it caused bad weather all over the place. So I was all ears. I got to hear this, right? And then they started explaining the science. And I said, hold on a second. That ain't right. Mom's like, what are you talking about, boy? And I said, well, Mom, CO2 isn't nothing more than two carbon atoms connected to one oxygen atom, which makes it heavier than oxygen. And if 10,000 feet is the highest you can go without supplemental oxygen, we know this because mountain climbers get lightheaded and dizzy if they don't take oxygen with them. And 14,000 feet, you got to start putting air and pressurizing the cabin inside of an airplane, otherwise everybody suffocates. So how is it that something that's heavier than oxygen is magically making up there where oxygen can't go? You know, everybody's like, oh, well, the wind blew it up there. Well, then there should be oxygen up there, too. You should be able to breathe at 30,000 feet. You know what I'm saying?
And how old were you when you figured that one out?
Nine.
Nine, exactly, nine. Ladies and gentlemen, it took a nine-year-old to figure out that global warming was a fake in 1970-something?
Yeah, and something else that... dawned on me as well. You know, if CO2 has the capability of trapping in radiation, it also has the capability of blocking it out, because it's not sheltered on one side and see-through on the other where it can just get in there and trap and that's it, you know. So every time a volcano erupts, it puts a lot of crud up in the air. And then every time that happens, we go through a cooling period because it's blocking out the heat from the sun. The Earth has many ways by which it heats, one of which is the moon itself actually creates a bulge at the equator because it's wanting to grab onto us, and it's spinning around in a circle, you know, and so it's flexing the crust. So now we got that flexing of the crust from the tug of the moon at the Earth, because the moon doesn't go in a perfect circle around the Earth, just like we don't go on a perfect circle around the sun. We're in an elliptical orbit, which means every so often we go out further than we did, and then once in a while we'll get closer, so it changes our temperatures to some extent. But since the Earth is half the 24 hours a day in one day, half the day it's in the dark, it's cold as crap in space. And the other side is getting radiant energy from the sun during daytime, and that radiant energy has to carry over through the night, otherwise we'd be freezing our booty off, because, you know, we wouldn't be absorbing any heat. We wouldn't be holding on to a heat long enough to survive. We'd be like at the top of the Earth and at the bottom of the Earth. It's cold as heck because it gets the least amount of sunlight. The equator is the warmest because it gets the most amount of sunlight, because it's obviously closest to the sun, because we're a sphere, you know. I did a video quite some time back called Earth Tilted, and you could see in that video where I'm shining a light on a basketball, and you can see the lines on the basketball. If you tilt the Earth, then you can see that it would change the weather patterns from top to bottom, because at the new equator, because of the new tilt of the Earth, it would be hot there, and the weather patterns would change both top and bottom. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, go watch my video, Earth Tilted, and you'll hear me say in that video that we're going to have some crazy weather. You know, we're going through some serious changes. With the seismic activity, we got multiple things going on, you know, planetary alignments. We got solar energy bombarding the planet. And every time the Earth spins, the sun spits off a coronal mass ejection, and that plasma hits our magnetosphere, it stretches it out into space, and then that magnetosphere snaps back into place. And in the process of doing that, it shakes our core up of our Earth, and causes things like volcanoes and earthquakes to erupt.
So we're quite into the idea of the dark star and Nibiru and stuff like that. We're not averse to a bit of dark companion.
You know what? I wouldn't put it past anything out there. I mean, we got rocks flying in from God knows where in space. And they come past. We're in a shooting gallery right now. So the fact that we haven't even been able to get out of our own solar system tells me that there could be a totally binary system or a dwarf star or whatever, something coming around, you know. So until I actually see it, you know, but that's just it, you know. Most of the doggone meteors that hit, nobody ever seen them coming.
That's one of the problems, is because, you know, we could be traveling at 3 million miles an hour, along with our galaxy, which is traveling at 3 million miles an hour, into a zone of space that is kind of dusty.
Yeah, and galaxies collide all the time.
Yeah, and dust on planetary scale, a mote of dust is usually as big as a bus or an aircraft carrier. On a planetary,
yep. Tell you what, you get hit with an acorn from space, and that's enough.
That's right.
I just, you know, look, man, we should already, if we're not, I mean, it's obvious you and I aren't flying through space and doing like the whole Star Trek version, but we as a humanity should already be traveling to the stars if indeed it's possible. We should be already there because we have the technology. We know what's out in the space. You know, we know what's here on Earth. We know we got all kinds of exotic materials, some of which we can't even tell you where they came from. You know, like some of the stuff they say they found in Roswell, New Mexico, or whatever, you know. Is there alien technology? Is there not? You know, when one lands in my yard, I'm going to jump on board and do one of those spaceship jackings that you hear about.
with a box cutter, right. Apparently, it'll work.
Yeah, there you go. Do some kung fu on that little 3-foot bug-eyed gray alien and gank his ship. Or first, at least give him the kindness of saying, hey, brother, you wanna like take off together and we'll go check out the stars or whatever. But if it happens like on the movie Mars Attacks, if he says ack, 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 then you got to hit first.
Well, I prefer to think that it's more of a kind of journey. What was it called? The Journey of the Voyager? Not the Journey of the Voyager. Anyway, it was this ship, automated ship, and it just picks up the kid, and the kid sits in there and says, take me to so-and-so, and it just does it.
You're talking about doggone it. Yeah, I got it on the tip.
I can't remember that. It's the old Alzheimer's. It's starting to set in. Must be all that aluminium foil I've smoked out of.
Well, I could run into the other room and I got the movie. Doggone it, and I can't remember.
It's all right. I'm sure somebody in the chat room.
That's my favorite one.
Huh?
That's my favorite movie.
Ah, yeah. So this the same one that we're talking about. This has got this like little steps that kind of,
yeah.
And the kid comes up and sits in the console, and it's all like, ooh. So,
hold on, I'm a running. I'm a look.
All right. You go and look. Well, I discover. Describe this movie, which is called Journey of the Something. Oh, that's the trouble when you get two old blokes talking together about stuff. What level will I get? Oh, I've got to go and see, find out what it is now. So. So. Oh, there you are. What's you got? What
I
is
got
it?
It? Flight of the Navigator.
Flight of the Navigator. There it is. A beautiful. Tell the people about this film. Now we've hyped it up so much.
Well, it's an awesome movie. Essentially, it was built back in supposedly in the 70s is when the movie was supposed to be taking place. But this little kid, he goes out into the woods, and then he falls down this hill, but then the next thing you know, he's gone. And so he ends up coming back years later, can't remember how he got there. Well, turns out that he was picked up by a robot alien who goes around and checks out for samples of life. And he didn't get back in time, and so many years had passed on the Earth before he made it back. Well, then he's got all these flight plans in his head, and NASA had found this ship, and they were had this ship in his deal, and it turns out the kid is being called to the ship, and then when he finally gets to the ship, he actually flies it up out of there, and eventually ends up back in his own time, but... If you haven't seen it, go look it up, Flight of the Navigator. It is really awesome movie.
There you go. Yeah, really, really a sweet, a beautiful science fiction movie that doesn't have car chases, guns going off all the time, loud things, and the sound that goes.
When he's flying down the road and you meet up with them teenagers in that car and he's playing that song by the Beach Boys, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was one of my favorite scenes.
So how did we get on? So we were talking, yeah, I mean, there is a dimension. It's like, you know, we talk about these timelines. The Project Camelot people talk about these various timelines that have very sprung up. But there is this thing that I call the organic timeline. That means the if nobody had messed around with time-space continuum in the 30s and 40s, that this is how it would be. And in that timeline, Tesla's technology is recognized. And in the day of today, people are flying around in silver vehicles silently throughout.
I can see it. You know, I fully believe there's multiple dimensions in all different directions, up, down, left, right, sideways, or whatever, and any deviation in your timeline would change your destiny all the way down the path. So it's kind of like the whole deal where if you time travel all the way back to whenever you was a kid and killed off your father, you know, you would never be born or whatever, but your time from where you were at and when you went back to the future, your whole history would have changed by the time you got up there. You see what I'm talking about?
That's right. And somebody else would have been your father.
Yeah.
Cause it's, yeah, exactly. Time traveling, where was it? Where were we time traveling Sasquatch? Heard, on, well, they weren't, they, I asked a representative, he's an erstwhile show host here, his name's Thomas Hughes, and he's a Sasquatch contactee, and we were talking with them one night, and we asked them how they got to the Earth. I was always interested in how Sasquatch got to the Earth, and their response through Thomas was that they originally came from Maldek. And before it was destroyed, they knew it was going to be destroyed, they came to the Earth in a pyramid, through the pyramids.
Well, I'll tell you what, nothing in this world would surprise me.
So space traveling pyramid Bigfoot? Yeah, we've done it.
Well, I had this episode, and I actually did a couple videos about it. I can't even remember the name of the doggone video. But anyway, I was working, Mini Harp, I think was the name of the video. But anyway, while I was doing this video, I had this, lucid, hallucination, whatever. I'm under the impression that I probably shocked the living crud out of myself and maybe was laying in the floor for an hour. But either way, I lost an hour's worth of time. But in the process of having this hallucination, so to speak, I literally start off. I'm standing there, and I got my camera in my hand, and I flip this switch on, and that's the last thing I remembered. Well, as I'm in this hallucination, I'm literally watching this guy that it looks like an Egyptian standing on a silver hovering platform. And he has this face mask that just kind of folds back, and he's sitting there and he's yelling at me and pointing. I could literally feel the spit coming off of his mouth as he's yelling at me, talking about all the stuff that I messed up, and that, you know, all this stuff that he was going to do to me, and mentioned a couple names of different groups, that one was going to disassemble me and the other one was going to torture me or whatever. Either way, whenever the whole deal was over, I made the video and all that, I started telling my friend about this deal, and his eyes peeked up all right out of the gate, and he said, "That's real." And I said, "What are you talking about?" Because I'd never heard these names up there. One of them was Anunnaki, and the other one was, I think, Palladiums or something like that. Anyway, so I tell him that one group was going to torture me, or the other group was going to disassemble me if I ever turned that thing back on again. And so he's like, no, I saw this on the internet. And I'm like, what? So he showed me on there, and he also showed me on there, there's a show called Stargate. Have you ever seen that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, show Stargate.
Exactly.
There's a scene where this guy, it doesn't look exactly like the guy, because the guy that I was talking to had a, it looked like the old King Tut style helmet on that opened up. But the other guy had something that looked like a beak or whatever. Anyway, so I'm like, yeah, that's almost like exactly what it was. So, you know, having no prior knowledge of either one of these doggone things, how did that get into my head before I did that video, until my friend come and told me, yeah, I saw this, you know, these guys are real. These are like ancient aliens or something like that, right? And I'm so, to this day, I still think I got the crud shocked out of me, but there's some things that just can't be explained, such as why I saw what I saw when I saw it, because either my brain scooted forward enough to watch a movie or something like that, or something. There had been some sort of logical explanation why I had that knowledge in my head that I didn't have before.
Well, here, yeah, we call that a download.
Well, then I downloaded something.
Yeah, because ever since then, have you been more creative by any chance? More?
Oh yeah,
more charged, more capacitor. You know what I'm saying? Do you think they've increased your Farad rating?
Well, I'll tell you this: that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, my brain does not shut off. I mean, it just runs continuously, and I'm seeing all these machines running my head, and I keep talking about them all the time. I keep trying to put out what I can put out and draw what I can draw, and if I'm in the middle of the night and I can't sleep, I'll get up and I'll draw what I'm seeing, and so on and so forth. But it's incredible. It's just, that's why I say we should be so much further advanced. I mean, it's all simple. It doesn't, there's nothing hard about it, you know. And if you talk about the laws of physics and you talk about breaking the laws of physics, you'd make a lot of people mad, especially in the college world, you know, in the mainstream science community.
Especially the physics police.
Yeah, if you think back in time, though, if there wasn't somebody like Tesla who literally thought outside the box, who went against the norm and tried things just to see what kind of results he would get, if there wasn't all these wild-haired mad scientists back in the day, we wouldn't have half of what we got right now. So, you know, it's thinking outside the box. And I think there needs to be a whole lot more of that.
Indeed, and we would have had a show were we to have had the other host today, but we have a show called Out of the Box, where we talk about stuff that is really very, very, very out of the box, so it'll be on.
Well, I say this, even if it's on, even if it's on Alien or Planet X or anything extraterrestrial, Bigfoot or whatever, if you close your mind off to it, you might just get surprised. And even in the process of talking about, you know, aliens from other, worlds or past technology, like you know, the lost city of Atlantis. Maybe there were civilizations before us that were so extremely advanced that they blew themselves up. You know, all that thought, even outside the box, is creativity that could put us towards an advancement. You know, and every little piece of the puzzle, you might have a piece of the puzzle, and if you say it out loud, and I hear it, it might merge with my piece of the puzzle, and then bam, we got something that works.
You're on the same frequency, my brother, because that's exactly what I say. I say it all the time. You know, everybody's got a piece of the puzzle, and I have a piece of yours. If you see what
I mean. Refuse to close my mind. If I close my mind and I have to think inside the box, it's boring inside the box.
It's gray. It's not sparkly enough.
Yeah, it's everybody has to conform, and I don't feel like conforming. It ain't no fun, you know. I mean, you can only learn so much. Once you learned everything inside the box, there is nothing outside the box. There's no need to do anything, you know. But outside here in the universe, there are so many mysteries that you could never learn them all. Unless you, you know, finally made to the ultimate stage of enlightenment, the, you know, basically got to meet God, then you wouldn't know every secret there was. And so, you know, that's what I want. I'm on a continuous quest for knowledge, and while I gotta live here down here on this planet with everyone else, I'd like this to be a peaceful planet, and I'd like to, you know, see everybody happy and taken care of. I believe that's what we're here for.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So, do you mind if anybody calls in?
No, I don't mind.
Okay. Well, if you're in the UK, we're on 0141-356-4141. That's 0141-356-4141. And if you're in the United States of Turtle Island, or some the sort of various states of Turtle Island, you can call on 775-773-3431. 775-773-3431. There's my telephone voice for you. Anyway, this is Ever Beyond on Wall Spirit Radio. My guest is Shaziz, the mad scientist of the Round Table. So, how do people, first of all, get to the Round Table call? Can they go through your website? And if so, what is that website?
Just catch me on Skype. Add me as a friend contact on Skype. Same user, Shazizz. And if you Google Shaziz, you'll find Shaziz.com, Shaziz Radio, and Shaziz on YouTube, and Shaziz on Facebook. So I'm probably pretty easy to get a hold of. If you get on ShazizRadio.com and type a letter in the chat room there, if I don't see it immediately, I will see it. I check it every day. And so, you know, say hi to me. Tell me you want me to contact you on Skype or something like that. And if you have a project that you're working on in alternative energy or whatever and need some help, we got friends all over in the alternative energy, alternative food, alternative medicine, alternative to just about everything you can find on all these networks that are associated with each other. And I put links to all the different radio networks so that if you don't like what you're hearing on ours, then you can listen to somebody else's, and there's links to get to their website as well. It's not about us being famous or having a whole bunch of subs or anything like that. It's about spreading the information out, you know, the information that we should have already been taught in school. As far as I'm concerned, technology that should have already been taught in school, technology that should already be available. You know, we talk about the inefficiency of our power grid, how it's just like a bunch of wires strung from one pole to the next. Tesla showed how to do it wirelessly, you know, and as far as building efficient electric motors that would last nearly indefinitely. You know, when I talked earlier about light bulbs, I got an Edison bulb that is probably 100 years old, and it still works to this very day. You can take a fluorescent bulb, and if you encase that in something like clear acrylic resin, you can run over it with your car. You can smash it up against the pole, and as long as you don't break that seal, that vacuum, that bulb will work forever. And you don't even have to plug it in. You just stick it next to some wireless energy, and bam, it lights up. So I know it's possible to make a light bulb that will last forever. You got LEDs that run off of such a minuscule amount that not only have the capability of putting off light, the way that they work is so amazing. You have essentially electrons interacting with photons that when they hit each other produce a visible light. Well, there's also invisible light. Light is heat and heat is light, vice versa. So you have within your grasp technology that you could literally make clothing that whenever it was hot outside, you'd be cool, vice versa. There's so much that could be done with that. You could build a solar panel that would work in pitch black. As long as there was any kind of radiant heat coming from anything, whether it be a reflection off of the moon or the heat off of your fireplace, you're continuously generating electricity, even in the dark. So, you know, the technology's there. We just gotta, I guess we're gonna have to just use it ourselves. You know, what else can I say?
That's right, that's right. And to that end, I'd really like a pure sine wave AC 12 volt to mains inverter that runs at 54 cycles. How difficult would that be? I mean, is that easy to find on your network?
Well, I got some friends that are really good in the electronics field, and I can pose that question to them and get you in contact with them, and they can tell you exactly what it is you need. I want to get a frequency generator that will go all the way from 0 hertz all the way up into the kilohertz range to do experiments with.
Oh,
because
you know what?
I want to find that sweet spot, that frequency that will interact with the electron itself. You know, it's like, have you ever heard of Dr. Royal Raymond Rife?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Well, he was doing work that had to deal with killing off bad cells while leaving good cells perfectly intact. And that was resonance were a specific frequency. It's like the opera singer with the glass. When the opera singer voice matches the resonance of that glass, it will begin to vibrate. They will resonate. And just a slight pitch above that will cause it to vibrate so much the glass shatters. Well, he was doing that with frequency waves to where it would go and he could kill off one bacteria while leaving the other one perfectly intact. Because every single thing out there, it doesn't matter if it's your coffee cup, you know, it has its own specific frequency. And so if you can find that specific frequency of your coffee cup, which could literally change when you have a certain amount of water in it, you know, if you have a half a cup of coffee in there, the frequency range would be different because, you know, of the total mass. It's like your body. Every single person, because they have a different body mass, a different amount of water, and different amount of chemicals in there, you are resonating on a specific frequency that is just like a radio frequency. You know, like you want to listen to your favorite radio station on 98.9 or whatever. It's always there. You can't hear it, but it's there. Until you tune in to that exact frequency, you can't hear it. But if you get close to it, you start to hear it some. You hear a little bit of static in the background until you get it right there on the dime. You can't hear it. So your body, the frequency that your body's picking out. If you had a sensitive enough tuner, you could tell who was where, when, just by their frequency. And the only way that they could avoid you tracking that frequency down is if you gained enough weight to change your frequency. Or kept bouncing up and down enough where they couldn't tune into you. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, indeed. That might be a good idea. Add another frequency to your frequency by bouncing on a small trampoline or a mattress.
Yeah. Or build you a device like a cloaking device that would buzz around you and change the frequency, you know, like it put an interference.
Mm. So,
you can obviously hear by what I'm talking about, it sounds way outside of the mainstream.
Well, it's outside the mainstream, but it's kind of new normal for us.
Well, I guess I'm in good company then.
You are definitely in good company. I've certainly enjoyed having you on the show, and I'd love to have you back sometime, you know, just as an update, because there's a constant stream of new energy coming in, and this new energy comes in the form of new ideas, and you are in the world of the new electrics, and
putting things out as fast as I can. I would be on this thing 24/7 if I could physically do it, but I put things out there that would put a question mark in somebody's head to get their mind a ticking. See, you know, if they're out there and they're debating with you whether something is or isn't possible, they're thinking. Whether they like it or not, they're thinking. And so as long as somebody's out there thinking, then they're not just following along the norm like a zombie and just believing every single thing that they hear. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, belief is a great opponent of independent thought.
Yeah, and I love being independent thought. I love the creativity. I don't know where all these numbers and information keep coming from, but I hope they just keep on coming because it's cool. I mean, I would love to be able to put device after device out there on the market. That's what we were talking about today as far as we would like to get some sort of buildings put, you know, strategically throughout the place where if you had a creative mind and you wanted to build something, or if you had an idea, you could come there and these guys with the materials could help you literally step by step build this thing. And we could build, but they're like right now. I said right now, we have the technology right now to build the perfect generator. There are things going on out there in the alternative energy community that are just mind-boggling. There's guys out there like Lid Motor that work on all kinds of different stuff, and Rimstar.org and Terry Woodruff working with Slayer Exciters and Tesla Technology and Ryan Abrams and Buddy doing the actual flux wind turbine. There's so many wonderful, brilliant individuals out there. And I say that we have every single answer to literally build the perfect generator that would not work like like you're seeing your average electricity. We'd have to redefine how we're generating that power from the get-go, but we could still, when it was all said and done, be able to plug it into the inefficient system that we call electricity today and still get it to function. Now, if you redesign the entire system, such as your electric motors, instead of using the super thick winding, you could wind these things to work off of strictly high voltage, super high voltage. It doesn't matter. As long as those fields will couple with each other and interact with each other, positives will repel themselves and negatives will, same thing. And positives repel. But you could literally design an electric motor that would work on so much less energy than what we're doing right now. I mean, it's just crazy.
So that's what we're really, I mean, I believe that the future lays perhaps in lower impact buildings, more hobbity, you know, under the ground, perhaps, shielded from the thermal fluctuations of being on the surface. We need to think about, you know, what kind of power sources can we have at our disposal? And,
the way that we're doing it right now isn't cutting.
Yeah.
And the way that we're doing it right now is essentially, it's a problem waiting to happen, because obviously if the power grid goes down, there's a lot of people that ain't getting water. There's a lot of people that ain't getting heat. And so if you know now that there is a future potential problem, that whether it be fuel-wise or whatever, then we should be working towards fixing that before it ever even gets there because, you know, right now we have prior knowledge. If we keep on going along with the norm and allowing these guys up here who are supposed representatives of the world to continue to fill up their pockets while the rest of the world deteriorates, it's like I say, my tax money put that chuck hole in the street that you blew your tire out with. If we continue to allow them to do what it is that they're doing, society's just going to be dragging its feet. We got all the technology, every single answer. We got the talent. There's people out there who can weld. There's people out there who are really good with electronics. There's mathematical wizards. If we can get these minds at the table, such as the Knights of the Round Table, or a building, a centralized building to where they had the access to tools and materials, you'd get your free energy device. And when I say free energy, I'm talking about a system by which you can tap into the energy that's all the way around you. You already do it on a daily basis. If you live anywhere in a humid climate and you get underneath a wool blanket at night, you'll see all the electrical charge and discharge going on under that blanket. Rubbing your feet across the carpet or a balloon across your hair and zapping your brother on the ear, there is energy galore. The atmospheric group, they run 200-foot poles up in the air and run a wire across there with nanocarbon on there, and they're pulling 2,000 volts out of the air, putting it down into a capacitor bank, and at the end having 9,000 volts to work with.
Holy Mother of Lord.
Huh?
Holy Mother of Lord. That is 9,000 volts out of a capacitor bank. So
they're doing it.
So, I mean, how high do you need a pole that you can
start?
Well,
there's a, but
what's,
they got,
what's the start, what's the entry level of, iron, this is, iron capture, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Static charge. Essentially, when the oxygen, hydrogen, and nitrogen are bouncing into each other, there's energy going off. You can literally see it with your naked eye if you look at it. If you really go outside and pay attention, look up in the blue sky and come back and tell me if you don't see nifty little sparks flying here and there and little bubbles all over the place. You can see it with your eyeballs. And at night, you can actually capture it with a digital camera. They call them orbs, and they think they're ghosts and all that kind of stuff. But it's energy. There's pure energy everywhere. We're floating in a sea of it. But these guys are picking it up in the air like that, and there is an equation out there for every so many feet off the ground will tell you how many volts that you get. Talk to Muddy. I think he knows how many volts it is, or Cultus Negrand out there, the desert experimenter on YouTube. Ask him, because he does the atmospheric motors. I'm more into plasma technology and high voltage. And I'm using things like the Slayer Exciter and the Tesla coil to run experiments with in plasma. And so, you know, there's a wide range. All these guys out here have a little bit of that piece of the puzzle to put into, you know, building the perfect machine. If you took what remstar.org did, which is an amazingly efficient little motor, it's like a pulse motor style, and every other coil's going north, south, so on down the line. But this thing runs so efficient, it's just amazing. It's almost perpetual motion. That's how efficient it is. But if you took that and you added it with the Wimshurst design with the two discs, you're not getting any back EMF. You're just generating high voltage with it, and then you're sparking that across to a capacitor bank and then charging that capacitor up. Throwing in the Van de Graaff generator, which essentially, you know, like rubbing your feet on the carpet is how the Van de Graaff works. It's got a belt that goes around some nylon pulleys, and it builds up a static charge, and then it'll send massive volts out. You know, if you let that thing sit there by itself and then reach about 2 or 3 feet away from it, it'll shoot a spark across to your hand that'll light you up. And so that technology, with that technology and some plasma technology in there, and if you take the ion motor that everybody's been putting on top their Tesla coil, and you see the nifty little thing spinning around, sparks going anywhere, they've already done capacitor, little ion drive capacitors that you can check out on YouTube. all this technology combined into one unit would make the perfect unit that once you got this puppy started, it would almost feed itself for its own energy off of just the static charge alone and the plasma effect that would be going on inside, you know, a vacuum. And as far as frictionless, there's some technology out there. Russ from RWG Research actually printed north-south on little blanks of magnets. He printed his own magnet he put the poles where he wanted them to. And so the magnet technology is getting incredible. There's a technology out there with another guy called a tractor beam magnet, and where he took a bunch of different magnets and he put them in like a brass deal, and it had a magnet inside there. And you could literally put these two magnets together. They would attract, but only so far, and you could drag it, and it was stuck right there in the place. You could hang it upside down, and it would stay there. So frictionless bearings is a reality. Plasma technology is a reality. All these other things like the Wimshurst, the Van de Graaff, the Lord Kelvin generator, all these different technologies combined in together, you got a perfect generator that once you got this puppy up and running, a little bit of wind, a little bit of solar to kind of supplement whatever energy you need to use it, you could use the solar to charge up batteries all day long and use that energy to run a small electric motor that every so often would kick on just enough to give it an extra spin, and you got the perfect generator. It's not polluting anything. It has no waste products or anything whatsoever. So we've got hydrogen technology. You got biofuels out the eyeball and worse. So if you take, instead of putting all your eggs in one basket, you take all these pieces of the puzzle, you put them down on the table, such as the Knights of the Round Table, and you bring all these brilliant minds together, and everybody steps back and looks and says, hey, you know, that piece fits with that one, and that fits with that one. Before it's all said and done, less than 30 days, you guys got a working device that you can now open source to the entire world, and nobody has any excuse for saying, we got to fight over oil or anything else. It's as simple as that.
Well said, Shaziz. www.shaziz, S-H-A-Z-I-Z-Z, two Z's at the end, .com, and that
ShazizRadio.com.
And ShazizRadio.com as well. There we go.
If you want to talk to me directly, Shaziz Radio is the place to go.
That's the place. And when are your shows?
8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Central for the Mad Science Show, which I'm contemplating on doing a 7-day-a-week deal when I get to a certain point. And on Sundays, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Central for the Knights of the Round Table. And I encourage anybody, if you got any kind of ideas whatsoever in alternative energy, alternatives to anything that is the system, that is the beast that's eating us all alive, come and share them with everybody. We'll make sure you get heard. You know, there's No Borders Radio, Awake Radio, there's your radio network, so many different radio networks out there that all these people want the exact same thing that you do. They want to live in a peaceful world. They want to leave something behind for their grandchildren as opposed to what we're having to contend with right now. That's what it's all about. It's not about us getting fame or fortune or wealthy. If it was out for me to get rich, I would already been rich. You know, if I wanted to be a dirty dealing, backstabbing double, no good for nothing, I could be rich right now. But I'm not into that. I got grandchildren. I got children and grandchildren. And the world that I leave them behind, if I don't try to do nothing now, we're standing at the crossroads, literally. And if I don't do nothing now, if I don't say nothing now, then whatever I leave behind, that's what they have to contend with. I say it like this. We are the founding fathers, the mothers, sisters, brothers, aunts, uncles, cousins of our children, our children's future. What we do today will definitely, without a doubt, define the world that they live in tomorrow. That's a big deal to me, man.
Shaziz, thank you so much. This has been Ever Beyond. Stand by. We're on our way to Frank Jordan and the Earth Mind Think Tank Group. Don't go away.
Beyond.